Blog Talk Radio.
About to go down the history hole.
Well, I think it's rather interesting because Iran was a very westernized country in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
Large portions of the population were educated. Large portions were well-educated. And Iran had an economy that was functionable.
It
does not have that going for it. It has a much, although I think population-wise they're larger, it has a much less educated population, has less of an economy than Iran did, and absent a large amount of money that we've been pushing into that country for years, that country is likely to be in a lot worse shape over the next couple of years than Iran has been able to, just by momentum, maintain. I do feel that, you know, it's going to be on a downward trend faster. I don't know that I believe what I heard today as far as the Muslim Brotherhood telling the military to get ready to go after Israel. I think that would be a huge mistake on Egypt's part, on the Muslim Brotherhood's part, because Israel has gone through a, I won't say cleansing, but I think that they have decided that their reaction to Hezbollah and Lebanon 2 years ago was extremely weak and poor, and I don't think that they're going to repeat that with if somebody comes after them, if Egypt comes after them at any time in their thing. I think Israel will just turn Egypt's guts inside out, and Hezbollah will try and come after them from the north when Egypt comes in from the south, and I think Israel will just say, screw it, we can't win this, you know, in the court of public opinion, we can't win this at all.
Exactly.
If we rolled over and played dead, we wouldn't be able to win this. I think the most Israelis have learned that lesson, and they're just going to, you know, step it up a la 7 Day War and just, you know, take both of them out. I'd certainly like that to be the case.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, but Obama has no influence in Israel at this point. So there's really no reason for Israel to hold off. They're not going to get anything more out of Obama by doing so. So there's no benefit to them. There's no benefit to them at all holding back. So, and
yeah.
If they hold back, all they're doing is they're opening, you know, the door to letting Hezbollah get better armed again to their north, and Egypt to get better armed again to its south. There's no reason for them to do it.
Nope, not a bit. Not a bit.
You know, and so my opinion is, like many other opinions is, that if Muslim Brotherhood gets Egypt, war with Israel is inevitable. It's inevitable soon. And I expect it to be rather short-lived.
Well, we can pray for that. You know, that's just I'm hoping that that's right, and I'm not prepared to say that it isn't. At the same time, it really is one of those kinds of things where you say, okay, now what? And I'm not sure that we know now what is.
If this is Biden's test of Obama, he's already failed it.
Yeah.
yeah,
big time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. He,
yep.
And what's worse is that you know, as far as the Democrats are concerned, Hillary comes out of this smelling just as bad as Obama does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She's had an opportunity to do something in the background, and from what I can tell, she's done nothing except for whatever Obama has told her to do. You know,
right.
And that's just
yeah.
stupid.
Well, not only stupid, but I mean, if you really stop and think about it, this is one of those cases where if you don't do something, then you get tarred with the same brush that Obama's going to be tarred with, which is, oh, okay, repeat of the peanut farmer. And I'm not sure that anybody's going to survive that.
Yeah, you know, as I suggested to somebody else, you know, we've been trying to clean up the Carter mess for 30 years. You know, how long are we going to be cleaning up the mess, you know, from Obama in the Middle East?
Exactly.
You know, and I can easily see 10 or 15 years without any problem whatsoever. The unexpected consequences of this is just going to be, I don't think, you know, I consider Iran to be fairly stable, believe it or not. In many regards, it is a stable regime. I don't believe Egypt has that opportunity to do so. I think Egypt and North Africa are an entirely different environment than...
Yeah.
Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan area, you know, and I think Saudi Arabia is going to look at Iran to the northeast, and Egypt to the west, and Saudi Arabia is going to have a shit fit. This would be the time for Obama to say, you know, I think George Bush was really too close to the Saudis, and I think the United States needs to back away from the Saudis. This would be a good time for him to actually do something like that. And he seems to be inclined to doing something like that. You know, frankly, I would love to see the Saudis left out hung to dry.
That would be nice. Maybe that'll come after. I mean, maybe that'll happen. I don't know. I'm sitting here thinking, well, okay, so now what do we do? And I'm not sure that there's any really good choices there. I mean, I think ultimately what we wind up saying is that we're faced with the fait accompli. Yeah, that's too bad, but you know what? That's just kind of the breaks of the game. And you know,
I think Saudi Arabia, in some regards, understands which side its bread is buttered. They can't do what they want to do, which is to be westernized, because, you know, frankly, their power is based on the concept of being anti-West. I don't know. I'd be really happy to see the House of Saud fall. I really would.
Sure. Yeah.
Frankly, if it did, Saudi Arabia might actually turn red. I actually think that there would be a bloodbath in Saudi Arabia. Because Iran is going to want to come in and take over the holy sites. And I think, you know, there's enough anti-Sunni to create, you know, a mess there. Frankly, I'm hoping that the Muslims start really going after each other's throats.
Yeah, I saw something like that on Twitter. You know, somebody said, and I think it was last night, said, gosh, let's see. Our enemies are over there killing each other, and we want to do what?
What's the old saying? You know, if your enemy wants to commit suicide, step away from them.
Get away. Get away.
Act. Not interfere.
Yep.
And, you know, I think Obama is actually playing into that you know, I don't know that. I'd like to believe that they're that stupid. They may not be, but, you know, if Iran has a nuke, Iran may be that stupid.
Yeah, they could be. Let me put it this way, I guess. It is not something that I would bet against. I would not be surprised if I see it happen, but I don't expect it, but I wouldn't be surprised by it. So,
well, I hope that, you know, it's going to be a mess no matter which way it goes. I think it stops with Egypt at this point. I don't see other countries. I know that some people are talking about Jordan and Syria switching, you know, of being next down the totem pole. I don't see Syria doing that. Jordan is a place where things could change, but it's generally speaking a lot less quiet, a lot more quiet in that area. Syria has got things fairly locked down tight within its own borders, so, you know, I don't see anything. I don't see anything. Buzz, it's not a matter of Obama doing anything against the Saudis. It's all he has to do is do nothing for them. You know, and, you know, the Saudis hate Iran. The Saudis hate Iran and the Mullahs with such ferocity that they're willing to, you know, work with Israel, you know, on the side against Iran. With Iran having Lebanon, Syria, and Egypt controlling those at this point, Saudi Arabia has got to start feeling closed in. We know Israel is feeling closed in.
Yep.
But even Saudi Arabia has to feel closed in under those circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and all we need to do is just let Saudis just hang. You know, Obama just needs to say, you know, we really want to keep out of this at this point. We don't want to be in there. I mean, yeah, and Obama's a coward when it comes to foreign policy. So I think that would be, you know, doing nothing is the Obama way. And doing nothing for the Saudis under this circumstances is, for, in my opinion, the best play for us. And it actually falls into Obama's way of doing things. You know, It would be good for Obama not to do anything. And seeing how he likes to do nothing, you know, that's one place where it'll work out well, I think. No, I don't think he'll keep the Saudis in power. He's not inclined to. So
yeah.
And he can't be seen to be doing so. That bow to the king is, you know, is one thing. He can't be seen to be doing. Frankly, I'd love to tar him that way.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know, a
well,
vote for
I,
McCain
yeah.
is a guaranteed third, you know, third, whatchamacallit, third term for the Bush administration.
Yeah.
He's perfectly right, because so far Obama has done just about everything that Bush was doing.
So far,
ignoring things like Obamacare, which is a segue. Let's segue.
Yes, isn't it though? In the words of Joe Biden, that's a big effing deal.
Now, from the legal standpoint, here's the big deal about what this judge did. He stated it in his opinion, which I have only read part of. I have not finished reading the whole thing yet. I've only read part of it. And the part that's interesting is that the government made the argument that without the individual mandate, the rest of Obamacare fails. That the individual mandate was integral to the functioning of the rest of the law.
Yes.
And I remember a discussion about severability back when the law was being, debated in the Senate. The fact of the matter was that they had taken severability out of the law. Now, whenever courts rule, okay, about a law, one of the things that they do is hold the opinion that if Congress meant to do something, that they would actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And very often, you know, you will find that Congress has put a word in a place in the law that specifies a specific action. And then in another part of the law, you would think that they would use the same word because they want the same general thing to happen.
Yeah.
But oftentimes they don't use the same word. And the judges looking at that go, if they've used the term in one part of the law and then not used that term in another part of the law, it is an indication that, in fact, Congress didn't want to use that interpretation in the second part.
Uh-huh.
In this case, severability was in the law, was in the bill through many iterations. And before it was signed, severability was taken out of the law, specifically taken out of the law.
Hmm.
And debate was held about the fact, or at least discussion was held about the fact that severability was taken out of the law. And one of the things that Vincent said was, the judge that ruled, was that if Congress wanted severability in this law, they would have left the severability clause in the law. The fact that they took it out and
mm-hmm.
then argued that the individual mandate was integral to the law and without it the law fails is clear indication that Congress did not want the law to function without the individual mandate. Therefore, having ruled that the individual mandate is unconstitutional and no severability is written into the law,
mm-hmm.
he has
mm-hmm.
no choice, and he specifically said this, he has no choice but to void the whole law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and it's one of those things that that Victoria puts in her, in a lot of her documents that she has filed, you know, when there's going to be an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Severability is a common clause in contracts, laws and agreements, so that if a judge rules that part of the contract is no longer valid, that the rest of the contract is still valid.
Hmm. Okay.
So, in this particular case, I'm liking this idea, and it's likely to have a concurrence by the Supreme Court based on that. If the Supreme Court rules that the individual mandate is unconstitutional,
mm-hmm.
they will rule the same way on severability.
Hmm.
So, I'm encouraged by that. That means we don't have to worry about going after Obamacare or piecemeal. You know, it just, falls on its face. One hit. Now,
mm-hmm.
the advantage to this is that there's no reason why this can't make it to the Supreme Court by the end of the year.
Oh, really?
That doesn't mean that they'll take it up.
Yeah.
Which would be an interesting thing all by itself. If the Supreme Court actually didn't take it up, it would stand. Well, it has to, because two separate circuit courts have ruled separately, so they have to take it up.
Yeah, exactly.
But then
the question is when?
October, but it won't be heard until a year from now, year and a half from now.
Well, but the government can now petition for a stay. I mean, this judge did not stay his decision. And the thinking that I have read is that if a law is declared unconstitutional, it is null and void, and as if it had never been passed, until somebody either overrules him or gets a stay from that decision, that law is gone. So, if that's the case, then the government can either petition for a stay, and they would have to do that at an appellate level. This is circuit court, right? This Judge Vinson?
No, it's federal court.
Well, yeah, but which level?
This is federal circuit court, so.
Okay, so
yeah,
the appeal to that goes where?
No, it can go straight to the Supreme Court here.
Well, but isn't that kind of the government's choice? I mean, they can petition for a stay, but they can do that at a lower level than the Supreme Court, I think. I guess they could go to the district court, couldn't they?
No, I think that they need to, at this point, I think the only thing that can stay it is either that level or, you know, or go up to the Supreme Court.
I guess I thought the district courts were above the circuit courts, but maybe that's not true.
Well, I actually have to find, I don't know where he is.
I think he's out of Florida.
He's at federal district court. He's at federal district court level. Victoria?
What?
The ruling today was in federal district court. Does it get appealed to the federal appellate level, or does it go straight to the Supreme Court, given four federal district courts have already ruled? Per comment to us, he doesn't think that's a hard and fast rule.
Ah, okay. Isn't that interesting?
So
anyway,
okay.
An opinion that I read today by I think he was a law professor is that it could take up to 3 years to hit the Supreme Court. Now, obviously, that's with everybody agreeing to delay it and all that kind of stuff. But that was his thought, that if folks wanted to drag it out, it could take up to 3 years for it to hit the Supreme Court. Now, I don't know that anybody has an interest in dragging it out. Well, I don't know. Maybe the federal government does. Depends on if they get a stay, doesn't it? If they get a stay, their interest is in dragging it out. If they don't get a stay, then they need an early resolution, politically.
Well, the last thing that they want to do is they don't want to have this being argued in front of the Supreme Court next summer.
Exactly.
A year from now.
Exactly.
I would like it to be argued in front of the Supreme Court a year from now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be our druthers. Interesting.
Well,
kind of like a chess match here.
Yep.
No.
And at this particular point in time, you know, we have a checker player in the White House.
And a bad one at that. Well, I think it's a political calculation. And because it's a political calculation for him, I suspect that that's probably true for his attorney general also. But the states, I think, have got a say in this, particularly the victorious ones.
At this point, you know, they get to say that, you know, 27 states get to say that no Obamacare, you know, no aspect of Obamacare can be entertained in their state.
Exactly. Well, and God, it brings up so many collateral questions. This was the first year that taxes were going to start to hit based on Obamacare. What happens to those? I mean, one would think that they would go away, but what actually happens to them? I don't know. I would think that they would go away also, because he invalidated the whole thing because there was no severability clause. But the government might take the position, well, we're going to do it anyway. Yeah?
I can't see that. Well, that, you know, that's what the issues that I heard being raised today was, you know, that it's dead in its tracks. Nothing can be done with it at this point, given this ruling. Which seems to me to say that, you know, the government has to do something. They can't just let this sit.
True. Yeah. Well, I suppose their strategy is this. They either get a very quick resolution of it politically, which means judicially, and if that's adverse to them, they've got it out of the way and they can run on, oh, those heartless Republican bastards, they took away your health care and you need to reelect us so that we can get it back for you. Or two, they have to put it off so that it gets argued in 2013. Seems to me like those are their choices.
I don't know.
They sure don't want them argued in 2012.
Man, I want them arguing this in 2012.
Yeah, oh yeah, me too. But I don't. I can't see any upside to them. Not for them.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Let's segue into something else.
Okay. Cool. Here comes the segue. Everybody stand by.
The two big items of the day are Egypt. And there's little or nothing we can do there because the one thing that we can do is already too late. Obamacare is on the ropes and is probably likely to stay that way for a while. However, given that the Illinois Supreme Court ruled Rahm Emanuel's way, there's really nothing to say that the Supreme Court of the United States wouldn't do the same thing. Supposedly, somebody says that everything is going to turn on Kennedy. Isn't that a frightening concept?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That really is scary. Although, I heard today speculation that Kagan will have to recuse herself.
Wait a minute. Say it again.
I heard today that Kagan, Justice Kagan, will have to recuse herself.
On Obamacare?
Yeah.
Well, I can't imagine the Supreme Court going 4-4.
Well, you know what? If they did, the tie is the same as a win for us.
Roberts would be an idiot to take that case.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to go 4.
Well, Roberts isn't Obama's guy anyway. Is he? He isn't. He was appointed by Bush.
Right. All right. I'm not going to worry about it.
Okay.
I really am not going to worry about it. The reason I got distracted is somebody said something really smart and then turned around and said something really stupid online. And I really want to start beating on him, but I really don't want to do it at this point.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give you, I think I asked you this before we went on the show, and I don't remember that you answered it.
Oops.
Is there anything that you wished you had said in the last 2 years that you didn't?
Oh, gosh, you know me. I'm a big mouth. I just generally spew out whatever's at the top of my head. I can't think of anything that I can honestly say, gosh, I wish I had said this. There isn't anything that strikes me and any of the things that we've talked about that I said, gosh, I should have spoken up there. I should have said something. I should have done this, that, or the next thing. Not really.
I
love our show because I get to spout off whatever's on my mind, and that's one of the really neat things about it. Agree with me, disagree with me, doesn't matter. What you get is what I'm thinking at the time.
I have self-censored to a degree.
Yeah?
Mainly because the issues that have been really important have been the issues that are oriented towards the federal government. And that meant that for the most part, the social issues, which you and I tend to disagree on,
mm-hmm.
Are not as big a deal to me at the federal level. They're not federal issues. You actually
mm-hmm.
agree with me as far as that is concerned. They're not federal issues. There's no reason to be arguing them at the federal level, and both you and I are basically functioning at the federal level anyway. Am I speaking out of turn?
No.
You disagree?
I don't disagree that we don't agree on them, but at the same time, if you would prefer to see those handled at the state level, that's fine. My biggest problem about the social issues is that everybody says, gosh, how come you conservatives won't leave the social issues alone? And every time I see that comment, I think to myself, because the rest of you that are concerned about social issues won't leave them alone either. And so somebody's got to stand up and say, okay, fine, now what? So, that's the only thing that I get exercised about.
Yeah, we actually disagree on that.
Really?
I think so. I think you and I were arguing about that particular point that I'm interested in making the issue, continuing to make the issue when I really don't want it to be an issue at the federal level. However, I'm not interested in, yes, I am interested in telling social conservatives to shut up and sit down on their social issues. And let me be really clear about this, okay? I think that most social conservatives who hold their positions honestly, and I think that actually covers just about most of them, unlike liberals who hold their positions dishonestly, because if you call them on it, they, will back off or make other excuses.
Mm-hmm.
I think social conservatives generally hold their positions honestly. The problem I have is that they tend to be inconsistent in certain respects. One of the things that I've been arguing recently is, there's a large number of social conservatives that are really, really concerned with the rights of the Declaration of Independence, specifically starting with life.
Okay.
That life is really important, and people need to pay attention to it and honor that life. And I understand that, and I understand the point of view. But when you get them down to liberty, they will claim to be, and I don't think falsely, very much for personal liberty, personal freedom, personal responsibility. But once you get down to the pursuit of happiness part, yeah, they're not liking that so much.
I guess you're arguing with people I haven't seen then. I haven't seen that argument presented.
No, it hasn't been presented very often, and it's something that I have begun having conversations with people, and it seems to be a conversation stopper, which makes it kind of interesting to me. My relationship with Victoria is a pursuit of happiness issue.
Okay.
Pursuit of happiness is not just a simple, well, whatever makes you happy type thing. Humanity is a social animal. If you deny that social animal, lots of the opportunity to express itself, you're doing some detrimental work to that human animal, that human social animal.
Okay.
I find that the pursuit of happiness is a fundamental. A fundamental need, a fundamental requirement of the human condition.
Okay.
If you take somebody's life, that's one thing. If you take away their liberty, you've done a substantial disservice to the person, obviously. But if you take away their ability to pursue their own happiness, you've done the same thing. You have restricted their ability to be, that human social animal that needs that pursuit as much as they need food and water. They won't die as quickly if you eliminate that ability for them, but it will destroy the spirit of the person you're dealing with. I think that's what most people would understand is the fault with Marxist societies, socialist societies, is you've taken away the ability for people to pursue their own happiness.
Okay.
You've locked them into a specific way of life that gives them no opportunity to pursue their own happiness. You destroy the human spirit when you do that.
Okay.
Eliminating the ability for gays to engage in relationships that they find fundamental is an elimination of the pursuit of happiness. Now, nobody is suggesting, they will be quite clear, nobody is suggesting that gays can't have a relationship with other gays. Right?
Okay.
Nobody.
Okay.
That.
I'm no, nobody that I listen to, yeah.
Nobody is suggesting that. Gays can have all the relationships they want, they just can't have it legal.
No, that isn't quite what the argument is. You need to frame that correctly. You can have it as legal as you want. What you don't get to do is steal the word marriage.
Why not?
Because it isn't yours.
It isn't yours.
For thousands of years, it hasn't been yours.
It's not yours.
It's mankind's.
It's not your word.
It's mankind's. I'm part of mankind.
A word is just a word.
No, a word is not just a word. Words have meanings.
Yes, they do. Let's talk about the meanings.
I want to get back to your original argument, but go ahead.
Okay. I would argue that you can take a large piece of paper and write down all the characteristics of marriage. And that in all regards, in all regards,
a gay marriage and a straight marriage will meet all of those requirements. And in the places where people would argue they don't, nobody would suggest that heterosexuals that have those same characteristics lack a marriage. Let me be specific. A gay couple cannot procreate.
That's true.
However, a straight couple that cannot procreate is not denied marriage simply on that basis. Because we allow 80-year-olds to marry. They're not going to have any children. We don't require married couples that are incapable of having children to have children or not get married. So all the characteristics of the relationship exist on both sides. Now, because history has designated it in a specific way, doesn't mean that that is, in fact, the way it must maintain itself. If I list out 100 characteristics of a relationship, and you say, yes, that is a marriage, and then I say, this is a man and a man, or a woman, or a man and a woman, any argument that suggests that only one of those is a real marriage simply because of the gender of the two of the parties would seem to me to be inconsistent with the idea that the definition is being held consistent. It's just the desire not to use the word in one set of characteristics over another.
You know, that's a really sophisticated argument, and I give you credit for coming. I give you credit for coming up with it, but the fact of the matter is, marriage has denoted a relationship between a man and a woman for at least a couple thousand years. So, you know, you can make that argument if you'd like. That's fine, but the fact is, history is not on your side on that.
But let me frame. History is not on the side of our type of government. For thousands of years, our type of government didn't exist.
So
just because something, because a way existed for thousands of years, doesn't mean that it was right. Doesn't mean that it is the only way it can be. You know, slavery existed for tens of thousands of years. It wasn't right. And now it's not done, although it does still exist in some places.
Yeah,
but we've looked at that and gone, this is stupid, this is wrong, we're not going to allow that. Just because it existed for thousands of years in a way does not mean that it should be continued simply because it existed for thousands of years that way. If it was wrong.
I will grant you that if you talk about slavery, if you talk about whether our form of government, I think you may be historically wrong on that, but if you talk about the American form of government is not having been around for thousands of years, but yet it is manifestly correct, then that's fine. But a government nor an institution of slavery does not define marriage. And you can make the argument, well, yeah, but it ought to, and I'm saying no, it doesn't. Why would it?
No, my argument is that if you list all the characteristics of marriage, that you will find all those characteristics in a gay relationship as often and as consistently as you will find it in a straight marriage.
That's fine. You still can't have our word.
What you're saying is, and I understand that. Well, I don't like it.
I understand that.
There's no rational, logical reason for your position. I'm not saying it has to be logical or rational. You just don't like it. And my argument is, as a basis for legal recognition in this country, that's not good enough.
Well,
you have made the argument in the past that if we used a different word, you'd be perfectly fine if it was exactly like marriage.
I'm okay.
That's fine. Am I wrong? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, I'm you know, make up a word, call it
whatever
you want.
If I say that,
just you can't call
it. Two men or two women who get Sathuma and have all the same legal rights as a married heterosexual couple.
Yep.
As long as we call it Sathuma, you're happy for people to have Sathuma.
I'm perfectly okay with that.
Okay. And my opinion is that, you know, when you have that as the basis of your argument, it's not much of an argument.
Well, and I would tell you that you can't steal our words anymore.
My argument is that words are going to change dramatically over the next 100 years.
Yeah.
And continue to do so.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that that in general most people recognize that gay relationships are as equal and important and fundamental as their own relationships. I'm glad of that because, frankly, that didn't exist 30 years ago. In a lot of ways, it didn't exist 10 years ago.
Did you see that thing from Just Be Pammy?
So... things are changing dramatically. They're going to continue to change dramatically. And, CJ's generation will not care. It just simply won't be an issue for them.
Could be.
And, you know, people like
you people,
totally fall off of the face of the earth. So it'll change over time. Society changes. And I make this argument in the book that when society doesn't change very much, society is, pretty hard, harsh on change.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, society does change. It's incremental.
Oh, sure.
It does change. It is a natural part of society to continue to change. But when society is able to take its desires and, create law that formalizes itself.
Mm-hmm.
Law
mm-hmm.
doesn't change like society changes. Society creates, cement shoes for itself by using law.
Yeah. Yep.
And the problem is society continues to move. It continues to change. It will continue to change to me because that is the nature of society, nature of humanity.
You got to be really careful with that argument. You really do, because that plays right into, the Constitution is a living document.
So I understand, and it's something that I need to be careful about when I talk to people. There is nothing in the Constitution that requires society to act in a certain way.
No.
Nope.
Well, other than within the constraints of that, yes.
The Constitution is government, is how government is supposed to act. And my problem is that the more, and this is, I think you will agree with this, the more government is used to lock in large chunks of society.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about large chunks of society, not just gay. I'm talking about, religious. I'm talking about, taxation. I'm talking about business. When you have a large amount of laws locking society into a specific way of reacting, you've locked society into behaving in a way that it can't. You're trying to create a static society.
Mm-hmm.
Static societies die. You can't have a society today that looks like society did 40 years ago. It can't. society changes. But there's nothing in our Constitution, nothing in our government that prevents that. Our Constitution doesn't, I believe our Constitution is designed to allow that flexibility in our society. I think the left has decided that they don't like that kind of flexibility in our society, because the left very much does not like the pursuit of happiness. That's where my problem is with it. The left hates the pursuit of happiness. The left does not want you to do what you want to do. The left wants you to do what it wants you to do. And the more the left takes the law and uses that to rigid the society, the worse things get. Because society doesn't do that. And my problem is that there's a certain segment of the social conservative movement that wants to do the same thing. There's parts of society that they don't want to see change at all. And they're trying to use government to lock those portions of society in a framework that they are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bad, because society can't stay that way. I think our country has a greater ability to be flexible than any other country, even now, today. You know, 40 years ago, Victoria and I could not be as open about our relationship as we are.
Sure.
It just wouldn't. There would be nightmare. You know,
mm-hmm.
CJ would have been yanked from us years ago because of it. You know, those are things that have changed in that regard.
Sure.
And, I think that's good. I don't think I have to worry about the Constitution, a living, breathing document. It's not a living, breathing document. The Constitution is, this is how government behaves. It has nothing to do with how society behaves. It has nothing to do with how individuals behave, with the exception of how those rights are exercised. I don't need a living, breathing document of government in order to create a society that works.
Mm-hmm.
Society is going to be the way it is. And I don't believe you want your children to be in exactly the same world that you grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
Want your children to have things better than you had.
Yes.
I think you want your children to have the good parts that you have and to get rid of the bad parts and grow and have more than you did. I don't think anybody says, the best thing for my children is to grow up exactly like I did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you can look back at your life and go, it was pretty damn good, but this little thing was bad, this little thing was bad, and I'd rather them not have to go through those little bad things.
Mm-hmm.
Like Vietnam.
Yeah.
Like the gas wars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want CJ to go through what I did growing up. I want her to have better. I want her to have more.
Okay.
And that means that society has to change so that those things don't happen again.
That's a really attractive argument. On the other hand, it's an argument that you say, but what about? And then you go through the whole dang litany of
teach them the way they should go, and they shall not depart from those ways.
Yep, that's true. That's an absolutely true statement.
I don't have
a problem with that one.
We are teaching CJ, the good qualities to be a good and honorable person. Okay? We're also teaching her how to live in today's society. And I think that's what's important. 23 seconds. We ran it close.
We did, by golly. Hey, folks, for the last time, Just Me, Pammy, Mama Gurkha, Buzz Zero, Mom, Louisa Ma, Hallie Five, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciated it.
I do. We do. Thanks.
Yep.
And we went off to the green room.
Hey, there you go. Cool. Yep. Good arguments tonight.
Huh?
Good arguments tonight.
You know, there's a way to approach this in a way that I think is honorable to the social conservative side. But at the same token, society is going to change.
Well, but neither one of us knows which way it's going to change.
It's going to change.
It is. But neither one of us knows how it's going to change.
No. And that's why I think the important part is that, I want to teach CJ to be an honorable, capable adult.
Yep.
With solid foundations, and to teach her how to deal with society as it is changing, not as how I want it to be, not as I hope it to be, but as it is. And, I think if we can, if we can accomplish that with CJ, I think that that's a positive thing.
Yep. I agree.
And I think we have done so. I think in many regards, CJ is, has met our expectations in that regard.
Cool.
There are times that, there are times when she looks at her peers and goes, man, they are a bunch of idiots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. It's like, people are sometimes idiots. They are.
And they have to have the freedom to be able to be idiots.
Yeah, long as they aren't hurting anybody else, that's fine.
All right.
Okay, kiddo.
William?
Hey, big hugs to V and CJ. And, God, it's been a great 2.5 years, hasn't it?
I enjoyed it.
I did, too. Super.
I enjoyed it.
Okay,
hey, Mary Lee. Hugs to you guys.
Yep.
And we'll keep in touch.
And I'll see you on Twitter.
All right, bye.
All right, bye.
Good night, everybody.